Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by my partner in crime, Odocto and Jay Stone. How are you doing? How are you doing, buddy?
I'm happy to announce that I'm replacing Justin and Brian. I'm excited about this new partnership. I love you. They're out. This is their inaugural end of shows.
We're right here. Yeah. We're literally in studio with you.
We bought your rights out. This is your last show. 200, live it up, ball out.
Because after tonight, the studio's in my house.
Negotiations. Look, Andrew, we know what's going down. Tonight's their last night. So live it up, boys.
I tried to have them kicked out of the studio, and I'm sorry, but it turns out that it's actually Brian's house. Oh, yeah. But we're working on it.
All right. Well, we can work logistics. We'll get a lawyer, and we'll deal what we got to deal with. Fines, permits, whatever.
And that's the other voice you did not hear is, Justin R. Young. Sorry.
All right. You know, I'm sick and tired of all this horseplay here. Like, I know there's a lot of revelry. We're live in Austin for South by Southwest. But I'm sick of you, Owen, trying to steal my job. I want to make Weird Things great again.
Let's send him back to New Jersey, where he belongs. Back with his Jersey Devils.
I spent all weekend campaigning about my dislike for Tom Merritt, and now that Tom Merritt is gone, you are now the pain and bearer of that punishment, and you will be taken down.
It wouldn't be South by Southwest without a pivot. So he's now pivoting his hate from Tom Merritt to me.
Exactly.
I just want to say that last week, we're like, man, we had Ileana Douglas, and she was amazing. I'm like, how can we top this? We're still trying to figure that out.
Yeah. We're asking.
But Brian, Justin, and Owen are actually in Austin. They're recording from the Brian's, what's currently Brian's studio.
Yeah.
But
soon to be overtaken and renamed.
At South by South by West.
You know it.
You know, which is sounds like you're having a great time, guys. Happy for you. I'm having a great time out here. So, you know, I'm doing great. So.
I mean, certainly not a competition, you know.
It's kind of like weird that you would bring that up. Our opening segment is who's having the most fun.
I got a cardboard box over there. I was kind of like, you know, playing with. That was kind of cool.
It's great. Hey, look
that
at
would
you.
That would be great if, like, anybody, like the police, for whatever reason, busted into Andrew's apartment and he, like a cat. He's just, like, batting around a crumpled piece of tape or something and, like, jumping in and out of an empty box.
If they don't have the password, they can't get in the fort. And that's the bottom line.
That's true, actually. So, that's a little known provision in the Constitution.
Yes. Basically, you may not enter. You do not know the password.
Also, no girls allowed.
No girls allowed.
Hey, you know what else isn't allowed?
What?
Strange creatures washing up on shore on the beach.
All right.
Live or dead?
I'm going to say definitely dead.
Okay. So me, Owen, Justin, walking down the beach hand in hand, swinging. Maybe singing the Double Mint Gum theme song jingle.
Yeah.
As we're skipping along, and all of a sudden we stop because there's something. I assume we smell it first, right?
Yeah. So if Bryce can pull us up, Acapulco, sea creature, wash ashore, I want you guys to see a photo. Because if you told me, like, hey, they're making some pizza dough on the beach, I'd be like, oh no. Beach pizza dough. Sounds really, really good.
I don't know about this. This is going to be gross.
All right, so we're walking down the street, and I want you to imagine. Oh my God.
It's like Cloverfield Monster.
Oh, my God.
It's made weirder with the sand, right, which is caking on it.
So but I think pizza dough is a good start, or maybe a sand-covered quilt.
What is that thing that happy families do, like where they like put the mask on?
Love and support each other?
The white like cast thing where you mold it with newspaper.
Oh, paper mache.
Paper mache.
It does look like that.
What? You know, families do. I tried not to say Caucasian family, but just trying not to specify. I'm trying to get there as quickly as possible. You got it. You got the point. Loving families.
Well, that was, you know, paper mache and casseroles, that mayonnaise, that's like those are staples of my childhood.
Exactly. You know exactly what I'm talking
okay,
about.
Okay, so I assume, since we started off, I assume this smells and is clearly biological, is clearly a corpse, but, well, I don't know. There's holes and stuff in there. Maybe it's a giant octopod of some variety? It looks like, man, to be honest, if this thing didn't smell, I wouldn't realize it's a living thing or was a living thing. It just looks like wet blankets coated in sand
with some tentacles and some random
places. It's got tentacles and stuff on it, and what we don't know is how long it was there and has kind of sunk into that very soft sand.
Yeah, the whole thing is uniform. It's all sand colored.
And that's look at that
dude. That looks like
bulbous.
that is Cthulhu's head. Show me that end part again.
There is a little Cthulhu.
Okay, so apparently Sabas de la Rosa Camacho, coordinator of the Civil Guard and Fire Brigade, told Mexican News, "We have no idea what type of animal it is, but I do know that it does not smell bad or have a fetid aroma."
Prove it. Lay on there. I want you to wrap it up like a blanket. That is Cthulhu's head, man.
Pretend you're Batman. Wrap yourself in the
thing you fear.
Yes.
If it's not funky, it's not right.
If you can look up
like
more than a washed-up sea creature.
All right. Do you want the scientific explanation of what it can be?
What?
James Mead, a marine mammals expert at the National Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C., told Live Science the top of the sperm whale's head contains a kind of organ used by the whale for echolocation, perched atop a bottom area known as the junk.
The
junk has separated from the skull, and you can see about midway through the video the nasal plugs, which form the valve that closes the bony neural nasal tubes.
Let me see this again. I never would have picked this. I thought we had it at Octopod.
Apparently, it's the junk.
We're looking at a sperm whale's junk, as if his name couldn't be phallic enough, that he's the sperm whale, and now we're talking about his junk.
Yeah. To be honest, that does look like a huge ball sack that's been deflated.
I mean, fair enough.
Fair enough, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if this is family show, but the description, like if you just looked at it. That's
all right, it is a family show, okay. So we're going to stop with the description.
All right, that's a good description.
But is the junk the junk?
We don't know that it's junk. That was a theory thrown out there by somebody.
The junk could be like, you know, the waddle underneath the mouth or something, right?
How this is a silly thing. How big a scientific find is this? I mean, this thing's destined to be sold to a truck stop somewhere, right?
Or a taco cart.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, Louise. Don't. I know. Oh, right.
I think it's just going to be an Asian tea for the next 20 years.
So do you remember there was a famous example of these Japanese fishermen pulling up what people said, oh, man, looks like a plesiosaur. Do you remember this photo? Japanese fisherman plesiosaur.
And no.
Spoiler, it wasn't. But it shows you that, you know, when things decay and fall apart and get gross, you know, I don't know about you guys, but in high school biology, I never actually dissected a whale. They didn't let us do that. And what you find, there you go.
Yeah, we're looking at pictures of what looks like a Jim Henson puppet from The Dark Crystal.
That looks like it could be that. Mm-hmm.
So this was not a plesiosaur. This was rather just
sperm whale.
Sperm whale.
It does
decompose sperm whale. So I guess really the biggest thing is that it has that big and both what is on the image that is up on the beach or the footage that is on the beach and that have in common are these big flappy elements to it, right? Like kind of look menacing or evil or like wings when you hang it like that.
I would love to point out that the news outlet that we're reading this, seeing this image from, has a caption underneath that says, "Whale, squid, or Pokemon?
Pokemon."
Gotta catch them all.
Well, we finally did.
So what do you do if you're actually there in that situation? This looks to be like, I don't know, 600 pounds of just decayed, flappy flesh.
Yeah.
I, who do you call?
We also somebody apparently this Pokemon thing has become a meme, and they have apparently here in this story, Facebook users offered some tongue-in-cheek identifications for the creatures, with one suggesting it's clearly Pokemon Muck.
Let's take a look.
I am not familiar with Pokemon.
I'm sorry. That is an accurate.
Oh my God! It's literally Muck.
When I first saw it, I thought the Blob from Marvel. But yeah. Yes.
Oh geez. Oh come on.
It could be.
Oh come on. That's exact. Well, someone fell into
a vat and they expanded, and now they can absorb anything that comes into contact with them. But he died.
The Blob? Yeah. No, he is just frozen, so he could get thawed out later.
Maybe, but in that case, he died. Sometimes people die. He went in the ocean.
Don't be grim. The Blob stays alive forever.
It's gone. It's already over. We have to find these things out.
Just as a note, like we had a couple weeks ago a mountain lion photo that was still feels like an icy pinprick to my soul when I think
show it again.
Has a second mountain lion head growing out the back of its head.
No.
Yeah. Let's take a look.
That's so crazy.
That top left. Yeah, that's it. Oh my God.
Speaking of which,
did you see?
It's
got a chin.
There was a video encounter going around on Reddit of a couple of hunters that got like wicked close approached by a mountain lion, and they had like a 30-second stare down as this thing just got real close and was not clear. You know, one of them had his hunting rifle trained on it and was waiting for it to lounge. Yeah. He's like, "Ah, you quit lounging, you."
And
you
he just goes, about, "Get yeah. up, Burt
get
Reynolds
up.
On the
yes." But man, that's a terrifying encounter. Nature, I say, keep nature in the outside.
Yeah, I used to have to feed a mountain lion.
Yeah, no, there's
have
there's,
to or
there's,
got to.
There's some very, very fun stories of Andrew and mine, our friend Rand Woodbury, who was an amazing magician and at that time employed a mountain lion.
Employed.
He did.
What kind of benefits did the mountain lion get?
He got three squares from Andrew Main.
This sounds like the gig economy. What are you, Ubering this mountain lion? Why does he have benefits?
When Rand would be out on the cruise ships, I'd go feed his mountain lion. And this was, you go up to this cage and there's this animal that weighs more than you with sharp teeth and claws like steak knives. And I'd take this, there was an outer cage and inner cage. I'd open up the outer cage and I'd take a raw chicken and put it up between the bars. Maybe there was like a 3-inch gap. And I'd kind of put my hand there close, but not too close. Because this thing could just, one slice could just slice open my hand if you wanted. He'd grab that chicken, that raw chicken, and then he would sit down there and start to crunch into it. And you could hear the sounds of the bones cracking he stared right at me, watching
as if to say, "This is you. I'm eating your flesh."
Oh, yeah. He's like, "You, dude. You know, you, Durston, you and me is a cage, man."
make one
long
wrong
story
move.
Going to sometime about how they eventually had a cat whisperer come and take him away, and it was like amazing. This German guy just walked around the cage. "It's okay, kitty. It's all right. It's okay, kitty. I know. And then he just opened it up, no leash or anything, and the cat just followed him into a truck.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. At what point does the okay, hold on. I assume that the cat was in the show at some point, and then there's a place where the cat's going to live on a farm. Just one day this is decided, or?
Hypothetically, let's say the cat was in the show and is a little bit smaller of a cat, and then maybe one day the cat appears in a cage, and the cat gets loose from the cage, and the cat runs through the audience, and the cat jumps up onto a balcony, and people applaud because they're amazed by the majesty of nature. And then maybe a magician, nobody we know, realizes that putting an apex predator on board a cruise ship with a bunch of fat tourists may not be the smartest thing in the world.
What a great movie that would be.
I was going to say, is this a movie?
What a great movie that would be.
What B-list Netflix 2 o'clock in the morning movie were you watching? Because I think I've seen this film before.
Cat had an interesting history. The cat started when this said, no, we're not naming names. Somebody gets a call from like the Miami Police Department that says, "Hey, we know you wanted a cat. We arrested this drug dealer, and we're down at the port. We found a little kitten chained to an engine block."
Wow.
Do you
he
want this?
He began in the smallest of places. Yeah, but soon so. The mountain of the sea would have his revenge.
Lion on the love boat.
Lion on the love boat.
What is amazing, and this is, you know, we're not talking about anybody specific, but I'm just going to set pause and talk about our friend Rand Woodbury.
Oh, yeah. What's he up to?
He's a brilliant and amazing human being, but he has this very distinct voice and manner of speaking. So it just it's made all these stories, theoretically, you know, if Ren were involved in them, are made all the much funnier when you understand that he has this like, ah, geez, all right, I know, you know, there's a cat, okay, you know, like, I guess he got out, I guess we need to go get the apex predator. He's just such a character, and you know, that story is just amazing. And also just it speaks so much to our conditioning that cats. Especially with magic, that like, you know, this cat is just roaming the audience and then like getting higher ground so it might better kill the prey below.
And everyone was like, yay!
Cats on a cruise coming this Thursday.
Release the real lion. Only a predator can take down the predator. Cat wars.
You know? You know you're from Florida when you have lots of stories about people owning wild cats.
And yeah.
I know of somebody whose family, they raised like tigers, and they had a neighbor decided to steal one of the tiger cubs.
Oh, I want one of those so bad.
Tiger cubs look adorable when they're cubs.
And there was this perch. What it was, the guy would look through the window. Well, like this, you could look through this window and you'd see like this adorable tiger cub. And so somebody said, oh, what? You know, I'm going to go through the window. I'm going to take that. What they didn't notice was above the window, there was a perch.
Mama bear.
Oh, good God.
Yes. Mama bear. Right. That's where you're going with this, right?
So one day somebody decides to open up the window, goes in to go grab the cub. Yeah. So anyhow, the owners come home and they just see a bloody leg hanging out the overside of the window.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay.
Mama bear don't play that.
Let's all agree that there are bad things that happens when you take the nature and bring it inside. I told you my platform. Keep nature outside.
Yeah.
However, what are the ethical implications? If there is a genetic modification that could be made, where a lion cub would grow normally for about 6 weeks and then just stay at that phase, completely looking like a six-month-old cub, adorable, can't really do any harm, pat, pat, pat you or whatever.
I would be standing outside my perch window singing the Circle of Life every morning because I'd have 57
you would
of
kick
them.
Over.
The Circle of Life.
You're holding it out in your window in Jersey?
I'd have 52, one for every week of the year. And we would run like the pack of wild lions that we are. And I would have every woman on earth loving me because it'd be an awe fist of cuteness. Who doesn't love? I wish that was real. Someone make that. I will fund that.
They're calling it amazing. In the chat room, they're calling it a teacup lion, which I love that idea.
Yes, yes. Who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want that pack? Who wouldn't want to run that pride?
Have you seen the miniature bulls?
Miniature bulls?
Yeah.
What?
I mean, like, but also, how do you know that, like, at some point, sure, they stay physically at a certain level, but maybe they get more aggressive,
more calculated
over time. You got, man, you think you're all hot stuff with your 52 little lions, and all of a sudden you realize that they are indeed pack animals, and they, you know, just eat your ass alive because you're swarmed.
Well, now you just ruined my dream.
Our miniature bulls are the perfect size, 36 to 46 inches, to prepare our young bull riders ages 7 to 14 by learning the proper foundation and techniques before advancing into the big bulls. But their size doesn't tell at all. Even though we got bulls for beginners and advanced riders, these bulls don't know they're short. They've got attitude, 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 attitude.
I didn't know that was a real thing.
Oh, yeah. They're like
my mind
size.
Is blown.
Bancroft, Indiana's finest miniature bull riding.
I need to Google every animal that I've ever loved in miniature size and see what's going on. Like, they have. I've seen the miniature horses. What are they called? The little ponies?
They call them limp miniature horses.
Yeah.
This was the podcast, Owen, where I will say me, and maybe somebody else here too, had the realization that a pony was not a baby horse.
And this is why you two are fired. But anyway,
wait,
miniature
it's not
your horse.
No, a pony's a totally different thing.
A pony is a baby.
No,
a baby.
What is a pony?
It's a totally, totally different breed.
What?
Yes.
Wait, you didn't know either?
What,
yes.
What happens when it grows up?
Oh, I don't believe that. I don't believe that.
A pony's always a pony.
I've watched 6 seasons of My Little Pony, and they've got thoroughbred ponies and little ponies and old stallion ponies, and they're all My Little Ponies.
Here you go. Search for horses versus ponies.
There we go. No.
The official definition of a pony is a horse that measures less than 14.2 hands. So they're full grown. They're full grown, just as a category. At some point, they grow all the way up, and they either made it to a horse or they're stuck in pony.
So a pony, a baby pony, is a foal.
Yeah,
and they are smaller than horse foals.
And they don't get any bigger than that? Oh, my God.
So right now, half the world is laughing at us.
Yeah. And the other half just had their minds blown.
Exactly. I like to refer to the half that is laughing at us as the entire Midwest.
Yeah. And I used to joke that, like, so when I know that, and then the whole idea of, like, I know what a baby chicken looks like, I know what a chick looks like, and I know what a chicken looks like. I don't know what comes in between. Does it just, like, wake up one morning and I'm like, That's why the Hulk always made sense to me, right? It happens to chickens.
Yeah, sure. No, it makes a lot of sense. Don't anger the chicks.
I am so sad inside right now.
What, that this is what we've come to as humanity?
That I've been corrected twice by people that are going to be no longer employed after today.
I think you bring up a really good point.
The pony thing has got my, like, I'm so upset that I did not know that. Yeah. I've been miseducating my child. I suffered through My Little Pony
that means
for 4 seasons.
It's more important than ever that people support us by heading on over to patreon.com/weirdthings.
Or not, because Brian and I are apparently off it. So,
the only way to get us on the show.
Keep the funding coming. We might bring back a special guest.
I'll tell you what. If we do pick up 15 to 20 patrons, taking us over 450 people, keeping us loud, live, and independent, then Justin and I will stay. Otherwise, it's just Owen from now on.
Yeah, that's what you want. It's me and the Mang.
Angel Mang.
Thank you to everybody who's supported us and... making weird things happen. Now we're at episode 200. That's pretty rad.
A very educational program. Very educational program.
We learned about squids on the beach.
I mean, when you're starting this idiotic, anything's educational.
Touche.
The Zoolander of science education. And I mean Zoolander too.
Yeah.
Did anybody see that?
Speaking of Florida stuff.
Yeah.
I got a Florida man story for you.
Oh, yes.
Now that the show is only half Florida man, normally it's
all
it's
Florida
two-third,
man.
Yeah. Two-third Florida man.
I mean, I was trying to think about, like, we've talked about this, the secret sauce that makes Florida this hotbed for news. You got old people and immigrants, and you got the fact that it's covered in coast, and you got different climes all over the place. Half of it is filled with alligators.
It's
an aggregate of the country. Everybody has been told their whole life, hey, get old, move to Florida. Got middle money, moved to Florida. So it's just a melting pot. It's literally the melting pot of the country.
Well, it's not literally. They're not actually melting people.
Wait until we get to the story, Brian.
They're melting the pot, and literally it's happening.
Oh, I see.
When's the last time you were in Florida?
Pot. The pot itself is melting.
When's the last time you stepped foot in Florida?
Exactly.
Thank you, Andrew Mang. Thank you.
Gentlemen, may I proceed?
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
I'm going to tell you 3 critical facts here.
Okay.
Florida man.
Yep.
Scuba diving.
Oh, jeez. Right.
Florida man thing to do.
And his name is Chris Defer Lacoon.
Kringle.
Okay.
Lacoon.
What happened to him? Any idea what happened? He's alive.
He got attacked by an alligator, right? He swam too far.
That's so far back in the newspaper that, you know, they don't even print it.
Like, the headline,
you know,
scuba
diver attacked by alligator. Like, yeah, and the streetlight turned green.
It's more like the obituaries. They are like, these are the people who got attacked by alligators this week.
No, here, typically scuba diving story is either attacked by something exotic or found something.
I guarantee he found a ton of drugs. He found baked into a statue or something.
Yeah, drugs. I mean, like, it got to be pretty
or
well packed for it to be down there. I mean, and all usually it's like historic or something. Like, it's some old
Man, you picture, can you imagine like 3 tons of coke goes down and you're the first fish to accidentally bite at that plastic and all of a sudden
you're down really productive.
And you're like, oh man, I gotta go tell all the other fish about this.
I think that's gonna be another dream sequence in Batman vs. Superman about how Aquaman got his powers.
It's a story. I'm gonna tell you the story because I want the committee to weigh in on this.
All right, go ahead.
So this is from CNN. Christopher LeCun said he didn't know he was scuba diving near a pipe from the St. Lucie nuclear power plant in Florida that pulled in around 500,000 gallons of ocean water per minute.
Oh, my God. Oh, no, it did not suck him up and in.
But he soon realized he'd lost control of the situation. When I was first sucked into the pipe,
turbulent,
it was unbelievable, told CNN. I had to hang on to my mask. It was to 20, 30 seconds before I got my bearings. He says he spent 4 or 5 minutes tumbling through the darkness of the pipe, which Florida Power and Light Co. says 16 feet in diameter and a quarter mile long. He thought about his wife and kids back on the boat.
Okay, hold on. Pause here. 16 feet in diameter, right? So you are scrambling around, arms and legs akimbo.
Yeah.
Thinking, I have no control. I can't stop this. And my guess is maybe he doesn't know. I would imagine in the panic, he's not thinking, oh, there's a nuclear power plant 16 miles away. I'm sure that's what's going on. All he knows is he's being sucked in and there ain't no swimming out of this thing.
That's the question.
Also, by the way, can we go to this shot here?
He's a photogenic dad.
He looks a lot like Brian.
Well, hold on.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Like, let's see.
Go to a shot of Brian.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Brian. It's been nice snowing you.
Brian, as you look at this wall.
This week, I'll show you how to survive getting sucked into a nuclear pipe.
as you look in this wall.
Yeah.
That's the 16 feet, the size as a whole is bigger than
this,
right?
This wall, yeah.
So I'm thinking to myself, first of all, you see a pipe that big and you swim towards it?
Well, no. He
was just swimming by and got sucked into
it? Yeah, that's what he was far away and just got, the tide is pulling.
Yeah, okay.
And he's trying to swim any direction.
What you're thinking in that mindset, because again, I don't know if you've ever swam or got pulled in by an undercurrent or anything, undertow, like that pull freaks you out.
Oh, sure.
For a second. But sure. To be drug, woo.
All right. Well, here let's.
You're making your list. You're like you're checking it twice.
let's get into what happens here with this man pipe suck man.
Well, I'm looking at this is right near where my parents live. I'm sure I could ask my dad about that. What's really curious, too, is that they used the canal off to the side there in one of the James Bond movies for, like, a chase sequence.
Oh, nice.
Here's what I'm going to say, all right?
Yeah.
I'm not calling shenanigans on anybody here, but I am saying I'm skeptical here about I was just scuba diving over here where this
Hold on. Can we get through his experience was before we question his motives of why he was hanging around there? Like what actually happened? He got sucked into a pipe and did a filtration system.
So listen, he says he spent 4 or 5 minutes tumbling through the darkness of the pipe, which Florida Power and Light Co. says 16 feet in diameter, a quarter miles long. And then I guess where did he end up?
A pond on the inside.
So he just got sucked.
Oh, so it gets sucked in. Okay. Well, that's not. I mean,
you saw the video right there. There were like the three things that push out into the center, and that's where it ended up. Again, to my question of, did he really just not? What was he doing? How did you not know? Like, no, don't go in there, or don't go near there.
You think he's a terrorist?
It's big, and I don't know.
So Christopher LeCun, besides being strikingly handsome, facial features.
Probably not as good a magician, though.
Looks, you never know.
He disappeared in a pipe and survived. Have you done that? Mm. Houdini? Mm.
I share Andrew's skepticism just in the ability to just like whoopsie doodle get sucked into a pipe like that is drawing in that much water that there's not. There's not sufficient warning or like a cage around it or something that would prevent like things from coming in.
Then what's your claim that he got in there, that there was a cage or?
Well, I don't. I mean, I don't know.
Okay, FPNL says, and again, it's a he said. We don't know, but they said, they said that it was the driver. The diver in July intentionally swam into one of the intake pipes after bypassing a piece of equipment to minimize the entry of objects. They say there is an 8-foot buoy floating at the point of the intake piping, which has been in place since the plant opened. And states that people should stay 100 feet away. There are 3 intake pipes which extend for a quarter mile along the ocean floor, and the one the diver swam into, 60-meter diameter, had a protective cap. So it's a
okay.
You know.
So he says
he's snooping.
He did see some sort of cap, but quote, that thing is not designed to keep anybody or anything out.
Well, not if you're trying to get in there.
So this is basically a secret facility holding ninja lions or something.
No,
he was trying to break in to infiltrate, and that was his only in. I've seen this on James Bond and
we got it with Florida Man, right?
Yeah.
He was just in there monkeying around. He bit off more than he wound up getting sucked into the pipe.
When we see the bear trapped at the top of the power pole, we don't just talk about how dumb a bear is. A bear does what a bear does. There's a pole, he's going to climb it. The Florida man does what a Florida man does. If there's a underwater tunnel, he's going to go poking around in it.
Brushwood attorney at law trying the brand new Florida man defense.
Exactly.
I mean, Florida man be Florida man in. That's, I mean, what's wrong with that?
This was Mission Impossible. I need that facility swept. I need to find out what's in the bowels of that facility. I need to know what's going on at that facility.
So, speaking of which reminded me, like, have you guys watched the latest Mission Impossible?
Yes. Sequence is in that movie, and that's how I know it's real and what's going down.
I couldn't, like, I have to finish it because they're always fun. But when they got to the point where, like, okay, here's the really elaborately designed facility that's going to be very cinematic but makes utterly no sense at all. You know, like, oh, you're going to have to scuba dive and all this to get to the servers. And I'm like,
yes, they have to be ultra cooled because the heat is so high and the nuclear plant above it makes a good cover for the system of the system.
Still at work says, how is there not a steel grid over the intake to prevent large objects from entering? Well, because obviously it wasn't going into machinery where they had to worry about that. Like, they could suck dolphins in there because it just spat out into that pond, and then they drink from that.
But they said that there was something over it. So, you know, I think what we need to do, guys, clearly we need to investigate.
We need to go investigate.
We need to get.
We can all stay in your parents' house. And, you know, your dad's got a boat.
Poor.
And now you're hired back because there's no way I'm getting off that boat. I'll stay up top to make sure if something goes wrong, I can make the call.
If Owen were to go, he would be the next mysterious dead object found on the beach.
If I were to go, I'd probably plug up the tube. I'm a little too big to be. I don't know if you see me in a wetsuit, but it's not pretty.
So here's the question is, how does this get to the news outlets? Like, does he go and like tell the story, or is there a police report filed that people...
If he got sucked in that pool and he got out, he had to be trespassing.
Oh, he's suing.
Yeah.
Yeah, really? Obviously. Oh, because it's Florida.
Has filed a lawsuit against FPNL over the July 12th experience. He says the intake pipe was not marked and posed a danger to him. And that's where we get the FPNL spokesman, Greg Bostowitz.
So the question, I mean, this also might be a preemptive strike. You know, if they're going to say, hey, man, you were trespassing and you were this, you were that. It's like, I would do the same thing. I'd be like, you know what? Up yours. I'm going to sue you for, you know, how did I end up there? Blah, take that. Logic. I'm Florida man. And then I fly away.
Yeah. Now when a bear ends up in a tree, it's like, oh, God, he's using the bear and tree defense again.
Do we blame the tree?
I do declare.
All of the jurors are just sitting in rapt attention. Like,
I wrote a little song about it.
I would like you to. Please take a look at Exhibit A.
He's right. You know, you've never blamed the bear. You don't.
No.
You just don't do it.
Bear be barren.
So I have a really quick addendum to that, too. So this is because it reminded me of a story that happened recently. And then it's they're Florida stories and they're China stories. So headline, rare giant salamander is found injured in Chinese sewage plant, right? And you're like, oh, wow, they found this rare giant salamander, the sewage plant. How'd that get there? And then you have to read the rest of the headline.
Are we guessing?
Like this rare.
Okay, so say it again one more time, because Brant's bringing it up here.
Rare giant salamander found injured in Chinese sewer plant. And you're like, oh, wow, look, this rare thing. Like, you never know where you're going to find a rare species. And then the explanation of where it came from.
I say a critically endangered giant salamander found in Chinese sewage plant.
Then scroll down.
Oh, God. All right.
Waiting for
it. Man. That salamander's got a hell of an abs on that salamander.
Yeah. Okay.
He works out.
Reports say that the amphibian measures 70 centimeters long and weighs 4 kilograms and probably escaped a farm or restaurant where it was being kept for its meat.
Ooh.
it's critically endangered salamander. And like, yay, it's a miracle. Look what we found. Oh, yeah. No, it was escaped a meat market or something.
Oh my God! Somebody, you know, this has got to be in development at Pixar, right? You know, where
did we talk about the? I mean, I can't source this properly at all, but did we talk about the gutter grease that China uses?
The gutter grease.
Have
huh?
you seen? Have you seen? Oh, you guys haven't seen this?
I have not seen the gutter grease.
All right, do we want to see this?
Yeah, gutter oil. That's what they call it. Watch just a little bit of this fair use. This is from Radio Free Asia. Let's turn it up just a little bit here.
It's all in a day's work for this woman. She opens up a manhole cover and scoops out as much slop as she can.
And it's full on.
Hold on.
What others might view as revolting, she sees as a bonanza. She works in the streets of the southern Chinese city of Shenzhen, a foot soldier.
I wish China's you could see the grimaces on everyone's face.
Oh, God!
After more than 10 years in the business, she says she's made enough money to build a house for her family back in her home village, 1,000 miles to the north.
They're throwing it in the van?
Her slop eventually winds up in a processing plant like this one, where it's combined with other animal fat refuse to create recycled cooking oil. Workers put the oil in barrels for delivery to restaurants and hotels.
Literally sewage.
How can you eat this?
If you eat it,
it's runoff from other restaurants and stuff, I presume.
Cooking oil has long been a cherished commodity in China, where stir-frying in a wok is the mainstay of daily meal preparation. The high profit margins from gutter oil production have proven irresistible. Chinese experts estimate that one-tenth of China's cooking oil is gutter oil,
one-tenth.
Which has been found to contain carcinogens and other toxins harmful to humans.
One-tenth! One-tenth!
It winds up in hole-in-the-wall restaurants and among street food vendors. Illegal production sites are often discovered.
So, all right, we're done. We're done.
Oh, God, the visuals don't get better.
No,
oh
my God. Nor should they. We're done. And by that, I mean the show itself.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
You can have it, Owen.
We're fine. Yeah, you know, like you guys can just... you guys can enjoy it.
Hey, Owen, you ever been to China?
When you put a bear in a tree, you don't blame the bear. But right now, Brian, you are the bear, and I'm blaming you. You put us in this tree. And yes, I've been to China. I was in China for a month, and I traveled up and down, and I ate at some of those places. And hopefully back then, in my day, that was 15 years ago, they weren't doing that. I had, you know.
Oh, no, I'm sure media attention has only made them cleaner.
This is the second worst thing from Asia that I've ever heard of.
Oh, my God.
Now this is first. It's taken over my thing that was number one. My dad told me stories about when he was in the military and he flew in and there was a horrible stench. It smelled like everything was dead. And they had totes on their roofs. And he's like, well, what are the totes for? They would take cabbage and, like, water and stick them on the roofs and let them ferment for months and then bring them down and eat them and let them cook on their roofs. And I was like, people ate that? And he said, yes. And it smelled like death. That
just,
I thought
just
that
rotten cabbage?
Yes. It was like a delicacy. And I'm like, that's disgusting. He's like, I've never smelled anything worse.
Is it
and
weird now that I'm actually salivating right now?
Yeah, that's kimchi.
Now, okay, now this is taking that over as like just something that's just why am I? I'm so
look, there's
sad.
A couple great kimchi places here.
No, I'm going to set myself on fire now. I can't believe that that's real. Like, if you'd have told me that story and I didn't see that video, I still don't. That's not real. I can't. That can't be life.
All right. Well, let's break it down a little bit, right? Because when we sewage, it is certainly in the sewer, right? But Andrew's point is that it is probably runoff from other oil. So this is,
well, it's okay. So
that's
it's
why they get to say recycle.
But yeah, oil and water, you know, they don't mix, and so the oil comes to the surface, and then they skim off the free oil on on top, and then they probably filter it a little bit. Add some. I'm salivating thinking about all this oil.
Well, I don't know. Filter. They certainly do the equivalent of just like adding more soy sauce.
Yeah, I think exactly.
I saw zero filter and more swishing around into a pot.
There, nobody's walking around in lab coats. It's just like somebody's backyard.
If they filtered, it would have been better. Like if she had like a skimmer, a net on the top of that, and then dumped up. But you're literally bringing in the garbage as well.
Yeah, it definitely looks like a supervillain's lair. Where this is all taking.
He's using a shovel in this facility.
It's the dangers. It's all the carcinogens and things like that that don't boil off, and so you're
Why is you're loading that on top of that on top of that on top of that on top of that? Although Todd Nagasa makes a good point in the chat room that the special ingredient is love.
You can taste it.
Why don't they build this like around a Lex Luthor crime? Like this seems more dastardly than Superman Returns.
Because nobody would believe it. Because nobody would believe it.
He's made billions off of 10% of recycled oils from the sewers. Superman's the only one that can stop him.
Horrible. Yeah, he's like recycling, so you know it's green.
Yeah,
I mean, in this just a case of using the whole buffalo. Don't we used to praise that?
Yeah,
wasn't that a great thing about Native Americans
and the oil refinery and all the ammonia,
the
nitrate,
sewage, and the garbage? It's from a sewer.
Yeah.
Very efficient.
Ninja Turtles are the only good things that have ever come from a sewer. The only good things that are in the rat, but that's it.
He went to the sewer though. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, gentlemen, want to jump into picks?
Sure. Heck yes. I got a pick.
Pick it up.
Little movie you might have heard some news about. Most profitable movie from Paramount this entire year. Little thing from a freshman director called 10 Cloverfield Lane. Went and saw that on Friday. Enjoyed it quite a bit. It's just a straight-up Hitchcock-style suspense story. If there's controversy about it. I mean, it's got 91% positive reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, but there is, you know, some people have fussed saying that they wished it wasn't marketed or branded as part of the Cloverfield universe or a kissing cousin to the Cloverfield story because it removed ambiguity about whether or not there would be Cloverfieldy. You know, the first, this is in the trailer, but it's like there's a significant amount of time where the character wonders whether or not there really is anything outside.
Yes.
And, you know, that's a big part of the suspense. But when you call it a Cloverfield movie, then that sort of removes a bit of that tension. But I don't know that I would have made a better – that's probably responsible for why it did so well.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I think – and this will be my pick too because I haven't really consumed a lot of stuff this week because I've been out here in Austin. But we did go see the movie together. Dan Trachtenberg is a very talented director and deserves a lot of the praise for this. I mean, this is a movie that is very economical in how much time you spend with very few people in very, very confined spaces. And if the movie is not directed well and he doesn't get the performances that he gets out of his actors, then this movie is like these movies have a tendency to get intolerable really fast. If things are not done well, this is done well. I think you will very, very much enjoy it. And my only quibbles are that like there is an element lost with how they handle the Cloverfield tie-in. To me, I don't think that it's wrong for them to have it. I think that at the point that they, and this is all out in the open, this is not speculation, that they took a script that wasn't tied to it and added stuff on, that there might have been different ways that they could do it. However, listen, it's the number one movie in America this week, and it is that because it's called 10 Cloverfield Lane and right. not the cellar or Valencia.
And I'll tell you what, man, the entire time, you know, we've been fans and friends with Dan Trachtenberg for a very long time, but the entire time I was watching, I was just thinking like freshman effort. This is how it all begins. You know, I think about watching Memento and seeing, you know, the careers that were spawned from that. And I just am so excited to see the beginning of big budget works for Dan.
And to be honest, he was tied very publicly to Why the Last Man for a long time. And I think this movie to me shows all the skills that he needs to do the Why the Last Man movie that I really, really want, which is more of a on the road meeting people. You don't know who they are, how the world's changed, who you can trust, who you can't trust. A lot of that is makes up the meat of this film. And I think it is, exceptional. So
the critics have been very, very high with praise for Dan's direction on that. And there's been, you know, you get the, like, you know, the gimmicky idea is that, you know, putting the Cloverfield world, using that like a Blumhouse sort of universe or whatever aside, that I'm thrilled to see that, you know, Dan's debut is getting, you know, he's getting accolades for his direction of the people. And that's a hard thing. That is the hardest part. And so I'm just absolutely excited to see that he's getting, you know, recognition for that. So
John Goodman, just a national treasure.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, John Goodman, of course, you know, starring role, best supporting actor goes to John Goodman's labored breathing the entire time.
Oh, my God. Well, let me just, I very rarely notice stuff like this because I'm not a huge audiophile, but the sound design in fantastic. This movie is great.
It's discomfortingly loud when it needs to be.
Yeah.
And I'm serious about, like, the sound design was like, you really notice. It just makes him so much creepier hearing his labored breathing and you know, mouth sounds as he's licking his lips and stuff. It's great.
Yeah, no, I mean it. I think it's a movie that needs it. You know, because again, three people in a bunker.
It's almost a play. Yeah, basically.
So, you know,
I have a pick, but Owen, do you have a pick? Do you have?
Sure. I didn't get to see Cloverfield yet, but I want to see it, and I'm excited to see it. You know, Brian called me and told me about it. And I was like, I had the same feeling because when it's a friend and it like works out and it's like, I was like, look at all the reviews and it was so good. And it's like, I don't even have to be biased because it's awesome. Like, I know it would be awesome. The last movie I saw was Zootopia. I took six children.
Was it good?
And I did not fall asleep. That's the first judgment on a child's movie of whether I think it's good. But let me tell you, it was actually fantastic because it had twists and turns. It was like a cop movie where you're trying to find out the crime, and they had so many twists in it, you didn't figure out who did the crime until, like, every time you think, oh, that's it, that makes sense, the movie's going to wind down, and then it ramps back up again.
Oh, that's
so
great.
It was really awesome.
Hey, by the way,
I loved it.
We're crowing about Cloverfield with a 91% freshness rating, Zootopia sitting pretty at a 99.
Dude, wow. It's legit. Like, it's a legit good, like, one of the better ones I've seen in a long time. And the design that they put into this, I saw some video where they basically ramped up the graphics five times more than any other movie they've ever done. So, like, you see the little hairs and wisps coming off the animals.
Yeah.
Like, moving and stuff. Like, it was a great movie.
Super high-quality renders.
Yeah, so, great movie.
So this is a film that has had quite a few think pieces because it wears some of its racial allegories and gender allegories on its sleeve. You are somebody who has a history of racial commentary. Did that speak to you? Is that something that you thought made the film better? Or?
As a rabbit, Owen.
Well, and the rabbit situation was a lot of sexism because, you know, she's the small bunny in a big, large animal job. She wanted to be a cop, and cops aren't bunnies. You can't be a cop. So they put her on the, you know, she's a meter maid. You know, and she's like, I don't want to be a meter maid. Give me a job. And so she goes out and she's like, I'm going to be the best darn meter maid she can be. And it plays all those stereotypes so well that someone like my daughter, who's very on to those things, she comes out. She's like, that's like that Trump thing, Dad. You can't treat people like that. Just because she's a bunny doesn't mean she's not, couldn't be as good as those other guys. And she proved them right. She was literally breaking down stuff and telling me how wrong it was. I'm like, I know, but at the end of the movie, they fixed it. Like, everybody's cool now.
Yeah.
Like, let's let it go. We don't need a lawyer. We're not going back and litigating the first 20 minutes of this movie. They realized they were wrong at the end.
They squashed it. We're good. Like, we're not taking this home tonight. Like, we're not writing any letters. We're good. But it did that in such nuance of the animals, the stereotypes, breaking through stereotypes, explaining why there's a stereotype and how you can overcome it. So it was a great movie for all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm actually really excited to see it. I've very much enjoyed everything that that I've seen of it, and the reviews have been extraordinarily positive. And I mean, come on, like, what can you say about a highly critically reviewed movie that is, you know, said by its creators to be an allegory to the crack academic or epidemic of the 80s and 90s.
Wow, so.
It's The Wire, but with animals.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
It so, you know. Not that it's really a spoiler, but there was one moment where, again, as a kid's movie, you're thinking, like, how are they going to reconcile this guy who's outsmart, outfoxing the rabbit, right? He was just getting her. She was trying to get him to work together. It wouldn't work. And the way she tricked him was like on some Al Capone tax evasion thing to get him to help. And I'm like, that is like the smartest thing that you could do to make it realistic, because he was just working her in every which way possible. And then finally she's like, you know what? I'm smarter than you. I'm gonna stop trying to get down to your level. And again, on all levels, you could just, as an adult, I enjoyed it. And the kids take that light.
And by the way, big ups to Disney. This was a movie that I was reading a thing. They were like basically finished with it, but they were getting into the final portions of it about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And in that version, the fox was the main character and the rabbit was the important but supporting character, and they realized that the heart of the movie was with this other was with the rabbit and not the fox, which to turn that ship around for animation is a big expensive thing, but Disney spent the money
and that's why Frozen works so well.
Yeah, because originally she was going to be the Ice Queen. Yes. Like, she was going to be the villain, and then they realized, like, after you hear the song Let It Go, you can't possibly not be on her side. So all of a sudden, that's why the third act is so sloppy, where it's like all of a sudden it's like, and this guy was secretly a jerk the whole time, and then the sisters love each other. Hey! Yeah.
And that's what made it so everyone can get into it, and little boys ended up wanting to be Elsa and stuff that year. Like, it was like such the momentum swing of emotion that it really brought everybody in on all levels. It wasn't just the princess story that everybody's used to and annoyed with and tired of.
Cool. Zootopia.
I have a pick.
Yeah. Pick it up. Is this Station Breaker?
Pick it up. Back on the scene.
No, Brian. It's not my book, Station Breaker, which is available now on Amazon.com.
Okay.
And in paperback, too. And this is one of these things where, first, if you've never watched The Godfather, your experience should be to watch Godfather, then Godfather 2, and then it ends there. They never made any other movies after that.
It's crazy how they stopped.
Okay. And after you've seen those movies, Godfather 1 and Godfather 2, if you have HBO or if you have access to, right now they have The Godfather. They call it the epic, and there have been a couple versions of this where – and it's not a better film than the other two or watching the other two back to back, but it's a different experience. With the epic, what they do is they edit the two movies together. I think Walter Murch actually did that. And they create a linear narrative starting with Vito Corleone, Vito Andaloni in, you know, the village of Corleone when he's a boy, and then moving forward through time to, you know, the legacy of a son. So where Godfather 1 is, you know, shows you one story, then two is both a prequel and a sequel. What they do is they take those elements and basically create a longer story that's actually got probably 20 or 30 minutes of extra footage in there. Nothing too pivotal, but you get a lot. You get some more character moments. You see Tom Hagen's family a little bit more. You get a little bit more about, you know, Al Neary, who became Michael Corleone's right-hand guy and stuff. So
you find out about the cannolis, right? Finally, we get some resolution on this cannoli thing that's been one of the most famous hanging plot lines in movie history.
What was the question?
I don't know. Where the cannolis came from or where they were going or something. I don't know.
You see that. And what's interesting, too, is, you know, looking up the – and that was the character of Vic Colenza, where you get into the story of, like, well, who came back for the sequel and who didn't come back? And so – Richard Castellano, who was played Clemenza in Godfather, did not want to come back and play Clemenza in Godfather 2. And actually, he was going to be have a much larger role in that, but he basically going against the family, and he refused. He wanted to write his own lines and stuff.
Oh, geez.
And Francis Ford Coppola is like, nope. So they changed up the role. Clemenza was always off scene. But in Godfather 2, they have the young Clemenza, which was played by Bruno Kirby, which, interesting enough, Richard S. Castellano, the actor who played Clemenza, and the famous line, you know, leave the gun, take the cannolis. His uncle, he did a TV show, a short-lived TV show called The Super, where Bruno Kirby played his son.
Oh, really?
But you get into the story about him, which is really gets kind of weird, is that his uncle was the Gambino crime family boss, Paul Castellano.
Oh, my God.
You know, who may have been involved in like hits and stuff and all that and had, you know, some beef with the Gottis. So you get into this, holy crap, this is like some scary stuff there.
That's awesome. For whatever reason, I saw a lot of people talking about it, but I didn't put two and two together that this wasn't just like a super extended version of the first Godfather. But this makes a ton of sense. If you're not familiar with, you know, the Godfather 2 effectively takes half of the plot that they didn't use from the original Mario Puzo novel to make up the shifting narrative of what is happening with the plot line that you saw at the that made up The Godfather, and then more of this switching to Vito Corleone and his initial ascendancy in New York. So it's super rad, man. I'm very excited. I'm really pumped to watch it.
Yeah, I think that structurally those movies work better watching part one and then part two. But after you've seen those, you want a different experience with some other scene around the corner, what else is going on there. I think it's certainly worthwhile.
Awesome, so. Possum.
Well, Owen, it's been weird, man. I look forward to next week when we do our show again.
Ebony and Ivory, Andrew Maine and O'Donnell.
The show sucks.
Awesomely, don't you boo? Get out my studio. It's old doctor's house now. Yes, indeed.
Raise your rates. You're gonna get triple electricity.
Come back. We can negotiate a deal. We can. Don't you have things to promote?
This is our studio now.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything you want to promote?
No, no. Have things to promote. I'm on the internet. I'm doing shows and stuff myself. You can find my stuff at IQMZ.com, IQMZ, or you can find me on the Twitters at O'Doctor. I got a Snapchat, but I don't use it. But Jerry said I should, so maybe I might start Snapchatting one day. I'm thinking about Snapchatting, but I don't Snapchat. Do you Snapchat?
I was at a party with a friend last night, and he's talking to this cute girl, and she's like, "What's your Snapchat?" And he just looks up at me like, "Oh, God." You know, it's just that feeling old.
Can I get your Snapchats?
Don't snap.
I want to snap your chats.
It's really been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.